I hear what you're saying, and I follow your arguments, but you're wrong. Here's Why by Ian Wolfe.
I spoke with Dr. Stephen Graves, Director of the Hunter Area Pathology Service and the Australian Rickettsial Reference Laboratory.
My name is Stephen Graves, and I'm going to be talking about the Chronic Fatigue Syndrome Conference in Cambridge.
Dr. Graves, for people who don't know much about chronic fatigue syndrome, I know it's a lot to ask, but would you be able to briefly give people an idea what the illness is?
Yes, I certainly can. Yes, you're right. People don't know a lot about it, and even the people that say they know a lot about it are often very confused. Essentially, chronic fatigue syndrome is a disease that can't really be diagnosed with any tests, and it's a clinical diagnosis where people have a period of fatigue that exceeds 6 months. So 6 months is taken as the cutoff point. And so usually something happens to them, they get unwell, and they have this fatigue that goes on beyond 6 months. Now, in some cases, it can go on for 9, 12 months. In other patients, it can go on for years. And occasionally, it can actually go on for decades. So it's a very diverse disease with a lot of other features associated with it. Some patients have other symptoms, but the thing that's common to all of them is this fatigue ability. People don't have any energy. They can't do their normal work. They can't do their normal social activities. And if you test their muscle activities, you actually take them into a laboratory and get them to do an exercise involving muscular activity, they cannot do it as well as normal people of that age and sex. So there are biological or biomedical markers for this disease, but the main one is this chronic fatigue that just goes on and just doesn't seem to get better for these poor people.
And it's not just a physical fatigue, is it? It's also an intellectual and emotional
fatigue. That's right. There are the other sort of things that go with it are what's called a brain fog, where people feel they can't function properly. Now, the reason for that is probably that their blood pressure is not working properly and they're not getting adequate brain circulation of blood. And so that's probably the main thing there. But you're right, it can be an emotional thing as well. It can be a tiredness where people don't sleep well. There can be pain associated with the chronic fatigue syndrome. Different pressure points on the body can cause pain. So there's a number of different subgroups. In fact, one of the people at the conference, Professor Jonathan Kerr, has divided chronic fatigue syndrome into 7 different groups based on molecular studies of which parts of their DNA are malfunctioning. And so he's actually got these 7 groups based on different types of illnesses that they've got. So it's not one illness. It's not like measles, or it's not like a broken limb or something like that. It's a lot more complicated. It's heterogeneous, really.
So there's a lot of different paths, I think, that can lead someone into the symptoms of chronic fatigue syndrome. It seems to be an illness that has more than one cause.
Oh, yes, most definitely. It's like, I use the word fever or high temperature. Now, you say someone's got a fever or a high temperature, but we know very well that there are dozens and dozens of different causes why someone might have a high temperature. So it's the same with this disease. There are probably many, many different precipitating factors. Now, one of the most important precipitating factors that we believe is infection, and different types of microorganisms seem to be responsible for these infections. So infection is one. Another seems to be certain chemical exposures that can cause people to also develop this type of syndrome. So, yes, the fatigue is the common end pathway of a whole variety of what you might call environmental stimuli that are affecting a person. And it's not anyone, it's a person with a particular genetic predisposition. So it's like a disease that you and I might be exposed to exactly the same virus, for example. I'm predisposed and get the chronic fatigue as a sequelae of the infection. You're not genetically predisposed. You get an acute infection, you get over it, and you're back to normal again. So it's a two-component disease. There's a genetic susceptibility, which is being shown now by the work of several people. So there's a genetic component to the illness, and so certain people are more susceptible than others, and that's being shown by the work of Kerr, looking at the genes of these people. And then there's an environmental stimulus, which in many cases appears to be an infection. And our work suggests that it could be a Q fever organism or rickettsial disease that could be the precipitant infection.
What about rickettsia? What's that?
Well, rickettsia are carried by ticks mainly, and in Australia the tick that can cause this is probably a tick that's found on bush animals, but it also likes biting people as well. So we've had a few examples of people who've been bitten by these ticks and have actually developed an illness and gone on to get a fatigue-like process. Q fever, on the other hand, although it is transmitted by ticks, most people get it as an aerosolized infection when animals kick up dust and dirt and things like that, and the microorganism is in the dust and people inhale it. So that's also an intracellular bacterium.
And I believe there's something a little odd going on with the immune systems of people with chronic fatigue syndrome.
Most definitely. Just about everybody who's looked at these people finds an abnormality in their immune system. You see, the immune system is designed to deal with infection. When someone is exposed to a microorganism, the immune system essentially is meant to destroy it. In the process of destroying it, the patient gets sick for a little while. That's an acute illness. So when you get exposed to influenza virus, you get the flu and you go to bed, you're sick, you've got a fever, you're very fatigued, your muscles ache and all the rest of it, and that's quite normal. And once your immune system has destroyed that microorganism by switching on and doing certain things, it's meant to go back to normal. Now, in patients with chronic fatigue syndrome, the feeling is that the immune system doesn't go back to normal properly, and it continues to tick along at an elevated rate. It's what we call pro-inflammatory cytokines are being produced by an immune system. And nearly everyone that's looked at these chronic fatigue syndrome patients have found raised pro-inflammatory cytokines, and these are probably what are making the patient feel unwell.
Right, and I believe there's two systems in the immune system. Is it TH1 and TH2?
Oh, that's getting very technical now. You've certainly done your homework there. The TH1 system is essentially the component of the system that destroys microorganisms that are infecting humans, and in the process of destroying them, you get an inflammatory response. The TH2 system tends to be a system that doesn't actually destroy the organism, the invading microorganism, but allows it to persist and establishes a chronic infection. So you get a host-parasite relationship that allows the parasite or the microorganism to persist and the host to persist also. It's a sort of balance between the immune system of the patient and the survival of the microorganism. So patients that have got a TH2 response to microorganism are more likely to get chronic fatigue syndrome than someone who's got a TH1 response. The T refers to the T lymphocytes and the helper T lymphocytes and how they deal with these invading microorganisms.
So as a result of these better understandings of what seems to be causing it and what the processes are there any new treatments on the horizon?
Well, there's lots of treatments being talked about, and at the conference quite a few were mentioned, but most of them haven't actually been tried with very many patients. And some of them are antiviral compounds, which work to destroy the viruses, and some of them are substances that modulate or modify the immune response. But there's no at this point in time, unfortunately, there's no recognised, approved treatment protocol that works with the bulk of patients. You know, what practitioners tend to do, they try something and see if it works with the patient, and if it does, all well and good. If it doesn't, they try something else. So we're almost at the pre-antibiotic stage of treating infectious diseases with regard to chronic fatigue syndrome. We don't have the magic bullets yet that will actually zero in and treat exactly what's wrong with the patient. So the answer to your question is really no good treatment just yet.
So if you're someone who has been diagnosed with chronic fatigue syndrome, what basically do you just have to trust that your doctor will, through trial and error, find something that might work for you? Or
that's pretty much what it comes down to at the moment. Until this basic biological research is finished and we really know what the pathogenesis is of chronic fatigue syndrome, the treatment protocol at the moment is find yourself a practitioner who at least understands chronic fatigue and has treated patients with chronic fatigue, and let them try certain protocols on you and see how they work. Because in some patients they do work and they get quite good relief, and in other patients they don't, so they have to try something else. So it's very much hit and miss at the moment. As I say, we're in a very early stage of understanding of this disease or this group of diseases, and as a consequence, treatment is not very well developed yet.
Oh, so it's not quite so hopeful at the moment. I know it's very difficult to find a doctor who does understand chronic fatigue syndrome if you're in that position. So I guess it's a matter of luck and knowing the right people.
Well, the problem is a lot of people who have had chronic fatigue syndrome for a long time are pretty depressed and miserable and feeling unhappy with life, and it stands to reason why they should be feeling so. So unfortunately, a lot of doctors will classify these people as having an emotional illness, having even a psychiatric illness, but they haven't seen the patient before they got sick, you see. So I've had the benefit of seeing patients before they've got sick, and they're perfectly normal, just like you and me. Energy, get up and go off to school, go off to work, you know, normal social life. Then something happens to them, usually infection, and then they get this chronic fatigue syndrome. And their doctor, or the doctor they consult, only sees them down the track, months down the track, or even years down the track, and they're not the same person that they were before. So this is the problem. Doctors only actually see you at that point of time when you're consulting with them, where they're consulting with you. So there's a lot of, misunderstanding about chronic fatigue syndrome amongst the medical profession, and I'm a doctor, so I can say that. My colleagues are not very sympathetic about patients with chronic fatigue syndrome, and it's a great shame. It is definitely a disease with a true biological basis. It's just that we don't understand what it is yet.
Right. So it's still the invisible illness, and the patients have to be good advocates at the moment to find the right doctor and get some good treatment.
Once it's all sorted out and we've got proper treatments, well, people will be able to go to any GP and there'll be a test for chronic fatigue syndrome, so there'll be a blood test which can be sent off. The result will come back. The doctor will say, well, Mrs. Smith, you've got chronic fatigue syndrome and here's the recommended treatment for it. Take these tablets twice a day for 3 weeks or whatever, and it'll be just like most of the other illnesses that we now deal with. But we're just not at that point in time yet.
Thank you, Stephen Graves, very much.
Very welcome.
If you'd like to hear more stories, then subscribe on the website www.hereswhy.tk.